Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of Today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, the host of Today's Business Radio. I'm here with Sam Zordich, my co-host, and our guest today is John Cameron from the Cameron Law Office. His law office deals in business transactions, real estate deals, and commercial radio or commercial litigation. Commercial radio. Here we go, John. You're on.
Morning, Tom.
Welcome to the show. Today's topic is new ventures, joint ventures, and partnerships. I assume this is when a potential business owner comes to you and they want to say, John, I got this great idea for a business. How do I protect myself? Or do you just drag them in and say, wait a minute, young man, we need to protect you? How does that work, John?
Well, Tom, we have a lot of clients who come to us who are typically experienced entrepreneurs or business owners who are looking to take advantage of a current opportunity. And a lot of times they have relationships in the business market where they want to joint venture or establish a new venture or a new going concern. And they come to us and say, Here's the opportunity we're trying to take advantage of. How can we put a structure together that'll let us do that and allow us to think about our exit strategy at the other end? Not only how do we get in, but how do we get out?
A lot of these folks come to you and they've got an idea and they're already selling some products or manufacturing or doing something and they're just doing it as an entrepreneur, sole proprietor, if you will. And then we start talking about litigation and liability issues. Is that what happens?
Sure. We have a lot of clients who, for example, might have multiple operations. We're dealing with a client right now that has operations out of state, and they've looked to do joint venture with another company where they want to each contribute assets to this going concern, and they need to figure out what are the tax consequences of that, how are they going to manage it, how are they going to capitalize it initially. And a lot of our people are good at figuring out of how they're going to handle the upside, but they don't spend a lot of time thinking about what if there's a bump in the road, what if we have to add additional capital, and what other people do we need on the team to make sure this thing works well.
You said you see a lot of experienced entrepreneurs, business people, but has it changed the type of people who are coming to you in the last year, for example?
Well, we have not only people who are trying to do going concerns and start a new business, but we have clients who've been heavily involved in real estate transactions, both residential and commercial, and they're looking back and trying to stabilize assets that they have taken control of over the last 10 or 15 years and try to figure out an exit strategy to stabilize those, to either dispose of them or figure out a way to recapitalize them, which requires them to either partner with their lenders or to partner with their existing partners or to find new partners. And each of these requires them to kind of consider, how are they going to go forward?
Kind of the upside and the downside.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's becoming more apparent to our clients who we've worked with that when things get, you know, when they're going well, it's easy to figure out where the money's going to go and where it's going to come from. When things don't go as well, they start looking at those issues a little more closely.
In our practice, we're seeing more and more execs that have recently been laid off and they've got some money in their pocket and they've got an idea and they want to start a business. I assume that you have some experienced business folks, but also some other inexperienced business folks that say, John, how do I do this? I want to start up this business. Am I a sole proprietor? Should I set up a corporation? Should I do a limited liability corporation? How should we do this? Is that true?
Well, absolutely, and I know that it's very important to work with the clients and understand what their ultimate goal is with regards to where the business, you know, if they want to establish this business and make it a going concern, not only from a capitalization point of view and an exit strategy, but on an ongoing basis of how they expect to run it, what they expect to get out of it as far as compensation, and that's important to work closely not only with us, and I know Jeff Starbird is going to be contributing on some future interviews, But and he's an accountant, and it's very important to work very closely, not only with your attorney, but your lawyer. And it was, so if you are an executive who's making a transition out of a job and wants to start a venture, it's not only good to go see an attorney and talk to him about the structure that'll help them with their capitalization, manage their liabilities, and look at their exit strategy, but they really need to also talk to their accountant about that structure as well. But that is exactly what we do. We come in and we help them figure out how to structure it.
So the team concept that we've talked about many times, you put together the attorney for the legal structure and the CPA to talk about the tax consequences of that legal structure. And then you've mentioned capitalization a few times, and Sam and I were talking about a startup this morning. I'm not sure all our listeners understand capitalization, but sometimes it's as simple as I'm going to use a credit card and start a business out of my garage and away we go. Or it might get more complicated. They might need some SBA financing. They might have all kinds of other issues. So a banking relationship is important to discuss at the time they're setting up and structuring that business as well, correct?
Absolutely. It's important for, you know, and many times it's not just a individual who's starting a business, but maybe it's two or three or more individuals who are trying to push this venture forward, because we all rely on our teams, and we many times these decisions aren't made in a vacuum. And what we find is that clients will come in and they'll have an expectation of, okay, we can manage these costs initially, but they may be not looking in their business plan far enough down the road as to how they're going to capitalize if things don't go perfectly. So we see clients utilizing a number of things, either putting capital in, contributing assets to a venture, or they're going to go out and establish some credit facility with a bank and borrow the money. And there's ramifications to each of these that everyone involved needs to understand.
Besides just the tax ramifications.
Correct.
If you've got one or more partners starting up a new venture of some kind, at the beginning, everybody's happy, everybody's excited, everybody's just chomping at the bit to get ready. Real good time to put together a buy-sell agreement and agree about what happens if this unravels. What happens if I want to buy you out? What happens if we come down from three partners to two partners or one partner? It's a lot easier to put together a buy-sell agreement or those agreements to control those issues now than it is down the road after some problem comes up.
Absolutely. And not only on the buy-sell side, but one of the things that we've helped clients with is amongst themselves is initially creating what we call a cross-indemnification agreement to say, okay, if we're all going to go out and make these commitments to a third-party lender or another party that's going to provide capital, what happens if things don't go right? How are we going to split that up? And or we've also been able to help clients in establishing their banking relationships. Many partners will go in and they'll sign a note with the bank, and what they don't realize is that they're all equally responsible for the full amount, so they can collect the full amount from one or all of them. People think, well, I own half of this, so I probably only owe half the debt. And in reality, they owe it all. But we've worked with lenders and tried to limit those types of obligations to be in concert with their ownership structure.
Let's go back to that. Let's say you've got three partners and you've got one old guy like me that maybe has some assets and a pretty good balance sheet, and you got a couple of young guys that are actually going to do most of the work, but they're equal partners. If I'm a banker and I'm going to loan to that group, I'm probably going to loan on the basis of the strength of the stronger guy. We're going to make the corporation or whatever the entity is sign a note, and we're going to make all three of them sign personal guarantees. Now you go down the road a piece and something's wrong. You hit a bump in the road. It isn't working. What's the bank going to do? The bank's going to go after the deepest pocket. And your cross-indemnity agreement allows him to do what with the junior partners?
Well, I mean, the agreement you have with the bank is an agreement with the third party. So the bank's going to come back, and as you said, they're going to enforce it against all three. But the reality is that when the day of collection comes, they're going to go after the strongest party to try and satisfy that obligation.
They're going to get the money wherever they can as fast as they can, aren't
right,
they?
Right. And amongst the partners then, the strongest partner is going to want to be able to turn to his other partners and say, I want my share of that obligation. And that's why you want to make sure that your documents that you have amongst your partners, whether it's a shareholder agreement, what we call a member control agreement in a limited liability company, or a partnership agreement, or for example, the cross indemnification agreement I've referenced, you want to make sure that these things have been referenced, because many times Business owners and entrepreneurs are optimistic by nature and spend 80% of the time...
That's putting it mildly.
...are spending a disproportionate amount of the time focusing on the upside and what we're going to do down the road and never really wanting to look at what the potential risks are. And if someone is coming with... And you'll find in a lot of partnerships that people bring disparate resources. Somebody might have the idea. Somebody might have the opportunity. Somebody might have the time to work on it. And somebody else may have the capital. And what you're finding is that, you know, if there's three people, there's kind of a tendency to say, okay, we're all a third, a third, a third. However, without understanding the real, they understand the upside, but understanding the risks involved gives them an opportunity to really evaluate, is that a fair sharing of the ownership side?
Give an example, if you would, about, you know, just one of those situations that you help work this, a partnership through.
Sure. Well,
from the beginning.
We have over the last we have a number of clients who are involved in commercial real estate. Either they're develop, own, or manage commercial real estate. We have clients who are also in the residential development. Who, as in the current market, everyone knows, has gone through some difficult times. And you would typically see a scenario where somebody might have found the opportunity, but might not have a lot of financial resources. And maybe that'd be one or two people. And then they'd go to someone who had a lot of financial resources to provide the equity. And they might tell themselves, okay, there's three of us here. We're all going to be a third, a third, a third. And as projects have stalled and kind of they've been unable to sell them out, we'll see that now the bank is coming in and there's maybe a shortfall. And they're bringing, the three partners in to talk about getting the loan satisfied, and maybe there's not enough assets there to satisfy that. So you get a situation where the partners now have to look to each other, and remember that one or two of the partners who took a third ownership stake don't have much. They had the idea or the opportunity, or maybe they could work the project, and now it's a time to settle up. So the partner who had the financial resources is most likely going to be the one that the bank goes after. And what we've been able to do in with clients is make sure that our underlying documents reflect it at that moment, that not only did the three partners understand that going in, but they have a mechanism for resolving that amongst themselves, because many times, when you sign these loan documents with the bank, that's between the partnership or the corporation and the bank and guaranteed by the individuals. But if the bank comes, a lot of times the documents are silent about how there's going to be a day of reckoning. So we've worked with clients to make sure that they understand that not the risks involved with doing a co-venture, not only understanding the upside, but understand the risks and allocating the rewards proportionately within the document.
So in that case, the documents you put together, whether it's the buy-sell or cross-indemnity, just really memorialize what the agreement was on the way in and set the stage for either success or failure, and in either case, what happens. And in the example you said, where maybe you've got a financial partner that put up some equity, and maybe you've got a partner that put up some land, and a third partner that was going to develop the whole property, and all of a sudden they hit the wall because the economy went sour. Now what happens when the bank stands up and says, you didn't finish the project, we want our money, we want the project, we want everything, they're going to reach into those deepest pockets and get their money back, and they're going to take the property, and then these cross indemnities are going to allow the partners to try to sort out who owes what to whom after the fact, right?
Absolutely. It's difficult to anticipate every possible scenario that's coming down the road.
No, that's your job, John. Oh, no. You've been at this for years.
Right. Well, there's always tuition being paid by any entrepreneur. You're always learning. I have a client who refers to it all the time as he's paying tuition.
And the tuition is attorney fees to the Cameron Law Office.
Right. Not necessarily. But one of the things is that we try to avoid as much as possible is amnesia. It's easy to get two, 3, 5 years down the road and kind of forget how did we get here. And, the palest ink is better than the best memory. So
didn't somebody say these type of agreements keep partners being good and honest partners?
Sure.
Those agreements keep them happy and honest, and we all remember what we did.
Right. And we're trying to fix the future and put the plan in place for these guys to work within the understanding of going forward. And also, the documents are, you know, typically we end up representing the entity, and many times, you know, and often we can't represent the multiple individuals. They should have their own attorney looking at that. But the best interest for the corporation is to make sure that the partnership is that it's structured in a way where it kind of keeps everybody working forward to either build the business or solve the problem. And that's the perspective that we bring forward.
I don't want to keep bringing up downers, but you deal with emergency plans in these buy-sell agreements as well, such as what happens if one of the partners is disabled, what happens if one of them is hit by the bus and killed, what happens if one of them wants to voluntarily leave the partnership, and what happens if the other partners want one of the partners to involuntarily leave the partnership for some reason. You deal with those topics as well, right?
Absolutely. That's something we would either see in a shareholder agreement or a buy-sell or a partnership agreement. And typically what we're trying to do there is recognize that you've got a group that is trying to advance a project for their all mutual benefit. However, at times there are certain things that can arise that would interfere with that ultimate goal, death, disability, both of which we would set up so that they would hopefully fund with some form of insurance. Or in the event that maybe there's a dispute between the partners, but your expectation going into the deal was that you were going to work and make your livelihood out of it as well. So maybe three of the partners gang up on a fourth one and want to push them out. You know, the documents should anticipate that type of scenario and make valuation adjustments if they're being let go for cause, where they really should be out.
Valuation adjustments. Let's get into that morass. Is there usually some type of an agreement where they agree that it's going to be such and such valuation, or does it set up for formal appraisals, or is there several ways to do that?
Well, there's several ways to do it, and typically what we anticipate is that we would have an opportunity for the agreement for them to meet on an annual basis and either consult with someone who could value the business or with the counsel of their accountant to set a value that they all agree on, that if something were to occur in the next 12 to 15 months, that would be the value. Many times, while we put it in the agreement, people are busy running their businesses and they don't do it, so we have a fallback.
Oh, but wait a minute, John. They don't update their agreements on an annual basis. What do they do with their corporate minute books? How do they look?
Many people have that corporate minute book sitting up on their shelf, but don't necessarily follow through with all of the corporate formalities that they should in the event that something unforeseen were to come forward.
So then they need an annual checkup at the Cameron Law Office so that they can update all their corporate records and make sure everything is memorialized.
Well, it would be my recommendation that someone be addressing it on an annual basis and just kind of reviewing where they are. And you'll find that maybe the anticipation is to come in and look at those minutes of the board action and to memorialize any significant events that occurred in the last year. But you'll also find out in those conversations that there's probably a half a dozen other things that they've thought about that should be addressed, but maybe haven't been.
So I think we're covering the basics, the 101s of buy-sell agreements among partners, and they call it different names for it. If it's an LLC or if it's a corporation, it's referred to, for instance, in a corporation, your shareholders.
Right.
In an LLC, your members. So in an LLC, it's a members agreement. Would that be correct?
That's correct. In Minnesota, we call it a member control agreement. In other states, they might call it an operating agreement.
Okay, so now we've talked about what happens in good times, what happens in bad times. That valuation thing we could talk about all day, but if it works correctly and you set it up, they might once a year take a look at the financials from the prior year and then artificially agree on a price that is okay. So they're really partaking in some estate planning in case something bad happens. The remaining partners would have a vehicle of some kind to set the valuation and terms to pay out to the heirs in case one of them dies. Is that how that works?
Sure. You know, you ultimately, whatever you agree on value, whether it's through mutual agreement or in time we were talking about in the event that they don't meet, or maybe they did meet, but now the valuation is old. And typically they'll expire at 12 or 15 months because businesses do change. They fluctuate in value, and you don't want to sign something that ultimately, 5 years later they didn't get back to it. So maybe it's expired or they didn't do it at all. So then we just set up a mechanism for an orderly process for valuing the company, which would involve third parties coming in as appraisers that might be first appointed by the corporation, then by the leaving shareholder, then by the other shareholder, then maybe those two pick a third. And it's not a perfect method, but If you can't agree on the value, hopefully you could agree on the process that would be orderly. Otherwise, you know, you can end up litigating these things without an orderly process. And then you're going to invite a third party into your relationship to decide that process for you.
Sounds like a lot of business things. If they don't have that annual meeting with John and formalize evaluation they can all agree to and let it go for a year or two or three, that's going to be really expensive, potentially, to get one appraisal or two or three, and then come to some kind of agreement, maybe have some litigation. That could be time-consuming and expensive, could be a real problem for the heirs if someone died, or in the case of a partnership that maybe one or two of the partners got greedy or something happened, whatever happened. If they don't have good updated corporate records and an agreement on the valuation, they could be spending a lot of money, couldn't they?
That's right, Tom. And then you have the opportunity at any time, you know, right now when things are going great, to figure out what that process is or the value.
So like we said earlier, at the beginning of a venture, when everybody's happy and excited and so forth, it's a lot easier to reach agreement on some of these things and set up these structures and mechanisms so that if and when something bad happens, that it's there and it's easy to deal with.
Right. And Tom, you had mentioned about structuring, you know, how do we pay for this? You know, how do we, if someone is going to leave or there's an unforeseen event, you know, we've talked about funding some of the unforeseen death or disability with insurance, which is an excellent tool for doing some transition planning. Or alternatively, the document might allow for a certain amount down and payments, and then, you know, language about how are we sure we're going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the other opportunity would, you know, if you don't do those types of things, then you're really looking at coming in and funding the whole thing up on the time of the event. And most small businesses are not looking to fund those types of things without much notice.
Well, a real estate transaction, they might be able to refinance and use the proceeds to buy somebody out. But without disability or life insurance in the case of a, you know, an emergency or a death, they're going to have to go to the provision that provides for payout over a period of time in order to be able to afford the payments.
Correct.
I saw one just last week on this voluntary, involuntary. Occasionally you get someone that wants to leave because he's just not happy. And then the other side of it is some of the partners may want someone to leave because they're not happy with him. And in the voluntary one, if I come in and said, I'm a partner and I'm busy and I don't like this, I want to leave, the provision provided that he get 0.75 or 75% of the valuation of his shares. And on the other side of it, if the partners tried to force him out, he got a premium, 1.25 times the valuation that was in there. It seemed to me that was a pretty good provision to take into account, voluntary or involuntary. Have you seen those?
Absolutely. And in fact, we're involved with those quite often where, partners reach, they have different visions about where the company is. When they first started out, they wanted to get it out.
Or maybe where it's going.
Or where it's going as well. Some people are happy with the markets they're in. Some feel that they need to be in new markets. And these are, you know, a healthy board or a healthy ownership will have conflicting ideas about where the business should go. And that's a healthy discussion to have disputes about that at the board table or amongst the partners. But at some point, these things can reach an impasse where one partner may say, hey, I want it this way, or I'm leaving, or you're leaving. And, you know, to avoid someone being thrown out without cause, you put these premiums in there because ultimately, if you think about it, they got together to bring this thing to a new level. Their collective was going to be more valuable than their individual. And by putting these, you know, from discouraging partners from running someone out without cause, or someone voluntarily leaving with their resources, you put these valuation adjustments in there to kind of keep them focused on moving the project forward. And you might even put some things in, we haven't touched on this, but restrictions on the assets of the corporation, the confidential information or non-competes and client lists. These are other things that are touched on when you have active owners in the business.
And restrictions on who can sell your partnership interest or your interest in the share. You usually have to offer it back to the corporation or offer it back to the entity, offer it back to the other partners first, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if I was partners with some people, I mean, I may not want to be partners with Tom, but I might want to be partners with Sam.
Well, I can see that. You here, Sam?
Yes. I wanted to ask you about the trust issue when it's crumbled. You know, you're talking about the involuntary, let's say. What about shotgun valuations or the shotgun clause?
Sure. Used quite often where, and basically for the folks that are listening that may not be familiar with it, basically a shotgun is, I can make an offer to buy your interest out, but upon its receipt, you can buy my interest out for the same amount.
So you better be careful making that first offer.
Right. It eliminates, you know, people kind of taking advantage. Typically, what you're trying to avoid there is maybe someone's in a financial position where they don't have the resources. Someone's trying to take advantage of someone's current business situation. And while they may want to do it, in the back of their mind, they say, well, I better not put that offer up because even though he's having tough times, he might come up with the cash.
Sure, he might find some other money, man, and I'm out of here. So you better be fair with that first offer. You mentioned a board. What kind of recommendations do you give them about a formal or informal board? I know most good businesses that are fast growth have a lot of issues that are legal issues, accounting issues. Some of the entrepreneurs can't read their financial statements. How about that, Sam?
Surprise.
What are your recommendations about putting together a board and getting outside advice from people in industry?
Well, I think that, you know, mostly what we see is that, you know, and clients, they understand it better once there's a dispute involved, is that if you're an active owner in a company, you really have a number of roles. You're a shareholder as your owner. You're on the board of directors typically. You're also probably an officer of the company, and you're working there every day, so you're an employee. So you have four different roles. And what they start to understand, maybe they're the president of one of the guys is the president of the company. And that president might think he runs the company, but he serves at the will of the board, and the board serves at the will of the shareholders. So there's always this order of, and you might have all these people in this particular hierarchy, but what I've seen with companies is they may have someone, a trusted advisor in the community who they believe has the experience to help them with the vision, who they may invite onto the board to help them and guide them along the way. In addition to board members, I see many companies have trusted advisors in the legal and accounting fields that will come in and address the board and give them advice on where they think that what the board scope is and what the officers...
What's a typical gap in skill set on the board?
Well, typically we see that a lot of people who are there at the day of the startup are on the board. And mm-hmm. they don't necessarily... Each one of these roles has a shareholder, board member, officer, and employee. It takes different skill set. And that is the hardest part for entrepreneurs and businesses to recognize who is, you know, it's like putting a team together. You know, you don't put your pitcher in right field. You know, you let him pitch.
So your day-to-day management team's out there with their head down working 24/7, just go, 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 go. But when they get to the board meeting, hopefully you've got some independent, experienced advisors that'll question the direction of the company and question the decisions being made and provide some new ideas or some clarity to where we're going and maybe just let them think outside the box a little bit.
Right, and I think the best companies that we've seen have these individuals who can come in and offer some insight outside of what the experience or skill set of the entrepreneurs starting the business are, and many times that these board meetings can be an exchange, and some times might be confrontational. But what I tell clients is that it's good to have an exchange of ideas that is it's advantageous for everyone to kind of push each other to the max to find out, are we going in the right direction? Are we thinking this through? But all times being respectful of the individuals. You know, attack the ideas, not the individual.
Well, we're here in Minnesota, so everybody's very polite and nice with each other. What does a board have as recourse, and what does the management team have as recourse if they completely don't agree?
Well, ultimately, the management team, the president, the vice president, the treasurer, secretary, they serve at the will of the board.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's ever a conflict, the hierarchy goes to the board. Now, if the ownership doesn't like what the board has done, the board serves at the will of the shareholders. So there's always this reporting hierarchy back to the owners.
John, we're going to have to wrap up this discussion on new ventures, joint ventures, partnerships, whatever the business idea might be, whatever the structure might be. But it seems to me that if a person with ideas and a new business idea comes to you, with your experience, you can help them talk through all the different formats, structures, what kind of a entity you want to form, what kind of board you want to put on. You can allow them to have a real good, thorough, big picture discussion of things that they might want to anticipate at the beginning of setting up a firm. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And we work with clients like that on a daily basis. And once they're established on an ongoing basis, trying to help, because their businesses will evolve and their needs will evolve. And it's that's what we do on a regular basis.
So if they come consult with you, they can go at it with their eyes open and a good idea of some of the topics that might come up and a good structure for how to operate it.
Right. At a minimum, we'll discuss them. Ultimately, it's their decision on what to implement.
And then you help formalize the paperwork and the structure and so forth.
That's right, Tom.
John, thanks for being with us today. We've had
a great
discussion. I'm Tom Lyons with my co-host, Sam Zordich. Thank you, John Cameron from the Cameron Law Office, for walking us through New Ventures, Joint Ventures, Partnerships, a 101 experience.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Sam.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.